No worries, Jeff.
Ranking Member Feinstein and members of the committee, I'm honored and humbled to appear before you today as a nominee for Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. I thank the President for entrusting me with this profound responsibility, as well as for the graciousness that he and the First Lady have shown my family throughout this process. I thank Senator Young for introducing me, as he did at my hearing, to serve on the Seventh Circuit.
Hey, Frank.
I also thank Senator Braun for his support.
You're muted.
He could not be with us via the satellite. I am also grateful to
Can you hear me?
Yep. Just fine.
So we'll see what happens now.
We'll see what happens. I've been sort of keeping one eye on the clock, and it was like, you know, if I start anything now, I'll be in there late. So why don't I just join early?
Ah, this is when the testimony is starting to get interesting.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You watching the confirmation hearings?
I'm not. Reading about politicians upsets me enough. Watching them in action makes me ill.
It's bizarre.
And these Supreme Court hearings have been so disgraceful.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's like,
where's our stimulus? Where's the money for the people? That's what's bizarre.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like politics get meaner and meaner every year. When we were young, it didn't seem very nice, but in comparison, it was gentle and civilized.
Well, and we didn't pay attention because it was boring.
Well, I don't know. I spent a lot of time watching the Watergate hearings.
Okay, well, that's different.
And yeah, well, it was, I don't know. Orrin Hatch and Ted Kennedy were friends. I don't think they were drinking buddies because Orrin Hatch is a Mormon, so I don't think he drinks. But they were friends. And there were lots of cross-aisle relationships. And the Republicans and Democrats from New York said, we're from New York. We have to work together for the sake of New York. The Republicans and Democrats from California said, you know, there are issues where we fight like cats and dogs, but we're here to protect the interests of California together. It seems gone. It's like, if you're a Republican congressman, you consider the Democrats evil and vice versa. And because they're evil, you're entitled to mistreat them. So they feel justified, you know, give them good reason to think you're evil. And it's more about scoring points than doing right by the country.
Yeah, scoring points with who?
With their buddies and with the partisans, with the extreme activists. But not even, you know, I mean, a lot of what's really nasty is just nasty. You know, it's not even about nasty for public consumption.
Yeah, it's kind of sickening.
Yeah. You know, and so there are stories about Democratic families and Republican families who would not want their children to marry somebody from the other party.
I've heard that.
You know, it's like, it's not Republican, it's not Protestant and Catholic, it's not Jewish and Christian, it's not Muslim and, you know, it's, I mean, we're...
It's kind of bizarre.
A friend of mine got really angry at me about a week ago when she was railing at Republicans and how bad they were. And I said, well, Democrats aren't behaving very well either. She just got furious. I wasn't defending the Republicans. I could understand her getting mad at me about that. So much anger.
So where is everybody today?
That's maybe weird. They're watching the hearings.
What?
Maybe they're watching the hearings.
Yeah, that'll put you to sleep. Oh, here's Allison. Muted. Allison.
She's, yeah.
Hello.
We seem to be the ones who are most talkative the last couple of weeks, the three
of
us.
Yeah. Oh, Frank, I figured out, remembered what we did with that whole cable thing, is we previously had been using faxing. So we switched back to faxing. All the customs paperwork.
That's
it was a mess. Luckily some of it was automatic, I mean computerized, but there was a lot of small stations that were still that still had to fax paper.
Nobody moved the cable away from the vending machine or the vending machine away from the cable?
Nope.
Big companies and their dysfunctions.
Yeah.
So are there any art shows going on? This is Columbus Day weekend. It's normally, what, St. James Court?
I did the Crozet Festival with Booth Central, and I thought it went very well, probably because I made a sale, but I've been comparing and contrasting with Occasion, and Booth Central had like, or Crozet had like some moderators on there. They just two people talking, kind of like a sports show. And they were, you know, talking about the artists and showing. So it was all artist-centrist, whereas Occasion had a lot of musical groups on and everything, and there was really no break and nobody really saying, go visit the artists.
Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't sound very smart.
Yeah, I was unhappy with Three Rivers this year. They did, it was all music when you went to their website, their Facebook page, and you had to ask for a link to the arts.
No. Well, Occasion has always been that. They've always had music playing and a stage and everything, and I've always been a little bit jealous because there seemed to be more people at the music place than coming out and looking at the artists. But I think that, and Penn State did also have music and things like that, but it was 4 days long. And they didn't have a Zoom component.
There's going to be Palm Springs group that does antiques shows and collectible shows is doing a watch show in New York City at the Metropolitan Pavilion in November. I don't know how that's going to go, but but it's a live show, actual booths and exhibitors and guests. And the Metropolitan Pavilion isn't that big, so they're going to have, unless they sell, you know, time tickets in advance, they're going to have lines around the block for very small numbers of people inside. I'm not going, but.
Well, at least it's like when it rains, only the buyers come out.
Yes, well, that's true. The people who come, who are willing to brave the lines and be outdoors in November, are going to be serious.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Crozet, or through Booth Central, they had you were not on Zoom, but each artist square had a little button that said request a meeting, and then it would pop up a Zoom thing. So I was able to sell a three-piece grouping to a lady, which is kind of nicer than selling it in the booth, because I don't always have all those, you know, online I have all my work available, and I was able to, you know, bring up Photoshop and build her a little grouping and move things in and out till she liked it. So it worked out quite well.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, Mr. Larry. How you guys doing?
All right. Marcia, hi.
Hi, Austin. Frank.
Marcia, you should unmute yourself.
She's shy.
Network?
Yep.
Yep.
Can hear you.
Okay. My camera's having problems.
I've shared before, I don't know if you heard me, Marcia, I had to get an external camera because the camera on my laptop would freeze after 20 minutes.
Yeah, sometimes it's okay and sometimes it's funky, so I don't know. My computer's a little old. It might be time for a new one.
Hewlett Packard just informed me that they're no longer supporting my laptop after I've just put several hundred dollars into it, replacing the hard drive with a digital drive.
Oh, no.
So I think I'm keeping it for a while anyway.
You need a computer person that can come to your house and keep everything running.
Yeah, right.
I have a guy that does that. I replaced the hard drive in my laptop. I replaced my main hard drive in my desktop computer also, and put in extra data drives.
Well, actually, I didn't actually put in the digital drive myself. It was a guy that I know. So, you know, he's got his own little company called Bergen IT, and he's in my synagogue. And we've known each other for years, and he supports small businesses and homes. So they'll do home audio and video. They'll do computer stuff. They'll do computer security, computer upgrades.
Did he make a backup of your hard drive and then restore it on the new drive?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's intact. All of my key files are in Google Drive anyway, so that if anything happens to the computer, I haven't lost anything really important.
Good.
I have to learn all that stuff. I'm still doing it.
Depends on your backup program.
Hmm?
It depends on your backup program. I was able to create a restorable backup and a boot CD, so I could boot to the CD and restore everything from the old hard drive onto the new hard drive.
Nice.
I did it all myself.
Google Drive, it's just, you need a Google Apps account, which is like $50 a year.
Mm-hmm. And
it was free when I started with it. But I think they're little by little adding costs and charging people for stuff.
And how much?
But it's still, so it's like 30 gigabytes.
Oh.
And Well, yeah, not enough for you, huh?
I'm a photographer.
I get it.
And I don't delete anything.
Well, in your case, a terabyte hard drive. Multi-terabyte hard drives.
I've got a blank 2 terabyte drive just for Photoshop scratch space.
Okay. Well, I mean, but my accounting files, websites actually, except for the graphics, don't take up very much space. So all the websites, all the accounting files, all of the customer contact data, all that's in Google Drive. And for that matter, since most of the websites I deal with are small, even though they're artist sites, the amount of graphics isn't huge compared to your needs. So I've got gigabytes of customer images.
Something else I don't have to learn.
Yes, I've got gigabytes of customer images, but not terabytes.
No, when I retired from programming, I gave all my books to my grandson and said, I don't want to learn anything new. And then the pandemic happened and I have to learn a whole bunch of new stuff. But
well, there are days where I don't want to learn anything new and there are days where I love learning new things. And I don't know why I react from one day to another that way. Generally, if it's incremental, if it's like, oh, there's this new technique that I don't quite have under my belt, I want to learn that. But if it's like, oh, this is a completely new paradigm for how you do website design, it's like, oh, no, not again.
Yeah.
And oh, well, okay, so I can't use Interchange anymore because it's not being supported in the US and maybe not even in Germany. And now I have to find a new platform.
So. That was a nice lead-in because I have a question I'd like to ask you guys. What's your experience on the virtual world so far with virtual art shows, success in the virtual world, and the way that the diversity of ways that you're seeing people handle doing virtual art shows?
You're late, Ron.
I'm late.
Yeah, I did. I did Penn State. I did $375, not bad, but it was 4 days long, no Zoom component or anything. This was one of the very early ones. And I was talking, they had music and things going on, but it was 4 days long. So people did, and they have a good following of people. I really enjoyed doing the show in person because people just really, I mean, we had people on the street letting us use their bathrooms and bringing us coffee, and it was great. But it was, it was one of the first efforts, and it wasn't bad. And then I did Occasion, and Occasion was 2 days long, 11 to 5. They had us set up a special Zoom meeting, like mine was 1:30 to 2:30 each day. But they had music and all kinds of things going on the online that people could watch, they showed a few artist videos and things like that, but I don't think they pushed the artist enough, which Occasion is that way. In person, there's a lot of things going on the stage that seem to supersede the art festival, although I do fairly well there, but I sold nothing. And basically, on my Zoom meeting, other artists came and joined me so we wouldn't get lonely, and I joined on theirs. And I just did Crozet this past weekend. It was 10 to 2, 4 hours through Booth Central, and you had an open Zoom thing. Each artist had a square, and it had go to the artist's website, meet with the artist, and things like that. So somebody dings when somebody wants to meet with you. And so I was able to get on and sell a 3-piece grouping because I was able to, bring up Photoshop and build them a little grouping. And then they'd say, what about this picture and that picture, and put it together. So it worked really well.
So you custom created a piece then for them while you're doing your Zoom meeting for Crozet?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, I do that in the booth all the time, that, you know, people want two or three that go together, and I'll move them around and everything. And, you know, once I start moving things around, I've usually got a sale. But online, I have my whole, you know, in a show, I just have what I brought with me. And online, I have everything. So I was able to build her something that I probably wouldn't have had at a show.
You didn't have very many people attempt to do that with you?
No, just the one person. And I only had one person come in and Zoom with me.
Interesting. Any thoughts on why so few people are willing to interact on a Zoom?
Well, I think it would have been better if it had been longer, although I did have to sit there and wait for the ding from 10 to 2. But, you know, I have to sit in front of my booth and wait for sales for a weekend.
So you're saying that if the show ran the Zoom meeting almost for the duration of the show hours, it would
yes.
be
better? And, but I think the way Booth Central did it is you weren't, I could, you know, it was just a ding. I didn't have to be on Zoom staring at myself for an hour.
But you did all the work in creating that triptych in Photoshop mm-hmm. on the computer while they were watching.
I build my booth in Photoshop. I make little...
Do you have an example you could show us?
Can I share?
Make her a co-host.
It's not set up that way, but let's
if
see.
You make her a co-host, she can share.
Multiple participants can share. All right.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks, Larry.
Photoshop. Okay, so.
You have to choose what you want to come to the forefront.
Oh, is that, so, oh.
Yeah, go to the share button and then you choose what you want
oh,
to be there.
Duh.
But it already has to be open.
Okay. Zoom meeting. Share. Where do I say? Oh, here?
Down at the bottom of the screen, it says share screen.
Share screen. Duh, I've done that before. Screen. Share. Okay. So you can see I'm in Photoshop here. Open, and I usually just go grab one. What's that? Photos. Shopify. Grab one like a three. There. Here's a three. And then I can see image size. And that is 1275 by 1000, and that is two. That is not big enough. Okay, let's open one. So when I'm building my booth, I make these little things. So let's grab a picture, say distant mountains, and I've got one called test copy. And I built it to scale to put in my booth, and then I can do image, you know, file, new, oops. How big is that? Hang on. Image size, so 480, width, 1260, so we'll make a new file, new, so 1260, oh, 1940, that's good. Okay, so I can take this guy and go Control A, Control C, Control V. And then I can pull another one. This is my white, black and white series. So. Here, and then just move them beside each other so they kind of see what they look like. Say they want a color one, let's grab a color one. Strange grouping.
And while you're doing this, so when they came into the Zoom meeting with you, when you say you have a virtual booth, do you have it like actually show a booth shot with examples like this? And then they say, oh, that triptych or that three piece panel back there. And then you adjust.
Yeah, I can do that too. File, open.
Because how would they first see that you even did this type of a presentation?
Well, it's on my website. There's a grouping section.
You're talking your website? Are you talking the Zoom website
I'm like, talking, no, my actual website. So people can go and on my website, and they've got vertical panels, horizontal panels, and groupings that I have built. So if they say, I like those two out of the grouping, but I want a different third.
Okay, so was your experience then with the Crozet virtual meeting with these people that they went to your website first and then
yes.
they came on? Okay. Okay, so it's not like they saw your booth.
No, not.
Okay.
Although sometimes I will do, you couldn't have a background in their Zoom. It was a kind of a special Zoom. Let me.
Because like Larry.
These are very beautiful.
Yeah, they
are. Thank you.
Because Larry, you were taught, like, do you have you been creating then a virtual booth so that when you're in a video like this, a Zoom, your booth shows in the background with work that people could interact with?
Well, it's, I use.
How do I get out of this, Larry? And let me show my virtual background.
Well.
Unshare. And then here we go. Okay, right. There you are. So a lot of times if I'm on video with somebody, that's not right. Yeah, choose virtual background. So I've got a virtual background here.
Oh. So if somebody said, I like so you're seeing on your screen what we're seeing in your image behind you.
Right.
Okay, so if they said we like the one second from the right, could you replace another one in there? Then you know what they're talking about. You know how to.
I would take them into screen sharing at that time. This is okay. One picture. This is actually my most popular grouping with winter, fall, summer, spring.
If I could ask you one last question. Did they do this from a cell phone or from, were they at home on a computer themselves?
Could they do it? I imagine, there were people on their iPad. I think it would be a little small to work with on their cell phone, but okay. There were people on their iPad. I'm not sure what she was on. Okay. Probably need a little bit bigger picture to get the whole effect. But it would have been nice if it had been longer, I think.
Okay. Anybody else? Or Larry, you were going to explain on the, before we go on virtual stuff, you were going to explain? Like your background looks great. So.
You mean my booth picture?
Yeah. So you're seeing on your screen the same thing that the people are seeing on, like we are. Seeing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Whenever they reference something because you can see it on your screen, you know what they're talking about, right?
Right. Let's see if I can take a picture out of the bin.
Larry has a green screen, which I don't. That's why you can see my jacket behind me.
Yeah. So when you say a green screen behind you, meaning?
If it's right behind me, in between me and the chair.
Okay.
You wouldn't see my jacket sitting on the chair.
So you have Larry, you have green cloth hanging behind you.
Yes. Here, I'll show you.
Ah.
Huh?
Yeah. Looks like you're in prison. That's great. That's great. So that works great. It looks really good. Both of you guys, they look great.
I conducted a Zoom webinar with two people who worked for Moet Hennessy. One was from Woodinville Whiskey in Washington State, and the other one was Glenmorangie Scotch in Glenmorangie, Scotland. And he had background images of the distillery, several of them, that he would go from one to another. And he would pick up a whiskey glass, and it would, depending on where his hand was, it would disappear.
Oh, not good.
Because the background image would get absorbed into the background image. The thing that manages the background image isn't that smart, and it gets confused. And so things appear and disappear, like Allison's jacket.
Oh, just a second, soda.
So has anybody else been having experiences with the shows in the virtual world yet? That good, bad, in between?
I do know that I'm watching the technology and the technology is improving. So I saw a demo yesterday that is sort of Zoom-like, but it has built-in breakout rooms that people can move voluntarily from one to another. So it could be a very useful tool for doing an online show that you would be able to see, okay, here is basically a show map, and I click on this booth, and it would take me into that booth. It wasn't designed for that, but you could see from where they are to where that would be a logical next step. And if somebody had the money to talk to them about it, they probably could build it for them.
Wow.
There's a company in Hong Kong, and about three times as expensive as Zoom for somewhat more capability. So if you really needed it, it could be worthwhile. You know, my synagogue, we've been doing all sorts of, basically we've been living on Zoom since March, and it works amazingly well. We're very proud of ourselves. And we're a little worried about when we go back live. We've done so well in having Zoom services that people, you know, we're in New Jersey, we have X members or who have moved to North Carolina, to move to Colorado, to move to Florida, who've been attending services online. And we had streaming before we shut down. It was horrible. The Zoom is enormously better. So we are worried about how much is it going to cost to rebuild the audiovisual inside the sanctuary so that we can have reliable sound, reliable pictures, maintain at least a fraction of the intimacy of seeing the rabbi filling the entire screen from her home when she's in the in shul with, you know, 50 people in front of her, and still be able to have a decent image and high quality sound for the people who are at home. And we're only at the beginning of figuring that out.
Yeah.
Now that's difficult. I've done a few Chamber of Commerce meetings where it was half Zoom and half people that felt brave enough to go there, and the sound was a problem.
And that's one of the things I think you guys are hitting on some things that I'm kind of puzzled by in terms of the Zoom meeting and these art shows. Is on the one hand, you've got the artists that were not always very technically challenged. And then on the other hand, if it's important to have good video and good sound, how are artists as a group supposed to hit that to be able to make Zoom meetings as part of a virtual art show actually work? Because I'm not convinced most artists have the capability of doing that. So is that really an important component of a virtual online show to be successful, in which case artists need to learn it? Or is it just one component for some people, and given how short a time period it is for the event currently, is it that critical in the success of the event? Because I think a lot of the virtual shows I've been hearing about are not very successful for very many people, but they're all different. So there's, you know, what are the things that are working? What are the things that aren't?
Right. So if you took this thing that I saw yesterday, and basically you said what is a little breakout room in their design was a booth, and you would need to give some of the artists tech support to help them configure. But I could remotely help somebody set up a booth, you know, in their home. I could be in Zoom and they could be in Zoom and I could be giving them advice. Now, it wouldn't be anywhere near as good as if I was there. I certainly couldn't help them figure out what the cameras are. Not that I really know about the cameras, but, you know, I can say, given this is the capability of your computer, and if you don't know anything more about cameras than I do, then we have to live with the camera you've got. If you know something more about cameras, then you have options that I can't help you with. But I can help you figure out how to pick pictures and present them and do share screen and therefore enable you to have an effective interaction with a person on the other side of a Zoom screen.
Oh, that would help. Yeah, that would help.
By the way, By the way, let me say something. If you have a green fabric and it has wrinkles in it, you don't see the wrinkles when you have a background image because the wrinkles are still green.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's great because I do have a green screen. I've never used it, but it's just wrinkled badly. So it's not going to matter then.
Right.
Awesome, Larry. Thank you.
I guess I'm going to have to break down and buy one.
So these cameras, like when you talk, Frank, when you're talking about cameras, you're not talking about the video camera that's built into the computer. You're talking about a separate entity of a camera.
Well, okay. So I am not very, I am maybe 18 inches from my computer screen.
Right.
I'm now 12 inches from my computer screen. My face is how much bigger?
Quite a bit.
Yeah. So the camera built into
it's a wide angle perspective.
Yeah. So
okay.
Larry can explain these things much better than I, but you know, yeah, I can demonstrate the effect.
The bigger in proportion.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's so, why I look so small is because I've got the laptop and then I've got the screen and I put the camera on top of this big screen.
Right. If you buy an external camera, you can plug it into the computer and you can buy a camera that you have much more focus control and you have much more control about how it's presented. Okay. You need to have some sophistication about cameras in order to choose the right one and use it properly.
Yeah. I bought the cheapest one because I didn't figure it would work, but it did. So now I'm regretting buying the cheapest one.
And that's something that you could give us recommendations on? We could hire you to, or
so you know. Somebody could hire Larry or Allison or me or some combination of two of the three of us, because I think Allison and Larry probably have overlapping expertise that I don't. But you know, two of us could probably help somebody do a pretty good job on setting themselves up.
Okay. And the microphones that you're talking at, are those in the computer or are those external too?
Mine is in my computer. I have not invested. For the synagogue, we invested in external cameras and microphones for the rabbi and the cantor. They do make a difference. It's surprising how well the first services without the microphones and cameras went, but they do make a difference. They do matter. And you know, if we think we're going to be doing virtual art fairs forever, even after live art fairs resume, then it behooves every artist to learn this stuff, because if only so that you can be participating in a hybrid art show in 2 years that's 1,000 miles away without having to pay for a hotel. You won't make the same kinds of sales. It won't be the same kind of interaction. It won't be, you know, it'll be a very different experience, but no schlepping.
But it, yeah.
Okay, wait. Here's the thing. The top two cameras are both from Logitech. Logitech. And one of them is the C920S. And the other is the Brio. Brio. The Brio costs twice as much, but it has a lot more features. It allows you to choose the angle, which is something that almost no other camera does.
And what else did, I mean, what?
They all have built-in microphones.
Ah, okay.
And the microphone actually, if you want to not use their microphone, you have to go into your Zoom settings and choose the microphone you want to use. Same with the camera.
Same with the camera.
I bought a C920S at the beginning of the summer. Remember, they're really hard to find this year because everybody's buying them.
Do any of them have like something to do with, okay, I've got this camera way up here, I'd like my face to show more like Frank's or Shirley?
It has to be in the middle of the screen and it can't.
There's no Zoom feature, Zoom camera feature.
It's not a Zoom feature. What you're talking about is actually changing the position of the camera.
Yeah, and that's.
And I tried to do that. I bought a 1/4-20 threaded rod, and I tried to mount the camera right in the middle of my screen, And you could do it, but it's really annoying. You can't see what's on the screen behind it.
Yeah, I set up a couple cigar boxes and set it out. I looked great, but I couldn't see anything.
So I also, I have a great microphone that I bought, a Rode microphone. And it's connected to my other computer right now. I use it when I'm trying to make a video now, but I have it mounted on a Bogan magic arm. So I can position it any way I need it.
So if you're getting into, say, doing a studio tour, or I think it's the word they use, or a virtual meeting with a client, and you actually have a studio, like you're a ceramic artist with a studio, or a glass artist with a blower in the studio, or a photographer, and you have panels or painter and panels set up in the background, if you're taking them to show them work on the actual, in your studio, does this become more complicated as far as microphone and camera and trying to have good sound while you're talking to them?
I did my video with my 750 camera mounted on a tripod.
You need somebody to actually do the sound and video for you.
Okay.
You know, it would make a great deal of sense to have a professional do a studio video for you.
Yeah, it would.
Okay.
Because my videos are terrible.
Okay.
On the other hand, you could do a FaceTime thing with an iPad and just carry the thing around and get a significant benefit.
The only problem I found with that is I did my first tour with the iPhone and it came out okay, except for you cannot switch from back camera to front camera in the middle of a video. So I start out, you know, looking in the camera and I can see myself, and then I have to turn it around, and then the last part I talk, I can't see what I look like, and boy, you can get some bad angles with an iPhone.
Well, you know, and the other thing is you should be doing your narration afterwards so that you can control everything about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you do this, if you have the professional do the studio film for you, the studio video for you, then that makes all sorts of sense. But on the other hand, if somebody calls you up and says, I would like to look at what you've got, and you've got your iPad out, you know, you could have a meaningful, useful thing happen.
Well, but you have to lay out all your pieces first.
For occasion, I did set up my iPad, log into Zoom for the Zoom meeting. So I had two Zoom things in, although there was a lot of feedback. So I put it in the studio in case somebody wanted to see my studio. This is where I print and create pictures on the computer, but then I have a whole nother room where I do framing and everything. So I figured I could take the iPad in there and show them and not have to move the computer.
So do you have any of you guys have feelings as to which is a potentially a more powerful presentation with a client, to actually do it on a computer screen like you've been we started out talking about, or to actually take them into your studio and show them things?
I'd say it was more powerful doing it on the computer. Of course, you know, my work is very visual. If, you know, somebody, a ceramics person, may not have a picture of every piece they have.
Yeah, I've been working on a video, and I actually have... I created the video out of still images starting with a booth picture and then doing each picture that's in the booth individually. And I need to drop in the narrative, and I haven't had time, and it's been 2 weeks because I need total silence for the hour that it takes to do it.
Oh.
And there's always something else happening in the house.
I've got a few videos on my website. One I did with my friend with her music. And then one I did with just images, and then a couple of talking videos. I did do a studio tour. If you see the studio tour, that's the one I did with the iPhone. And then I did a kind of a theory talk or an artist statement video with just the 750 on the tripod. But it was just right on me talking.
What about you, Frank? Mm-hmm. What about you? Do you?
Well, I'm a website developer. I'm not, you know, all my art is on computer screens automatically. Okay. Except for the food that I make, you know, I'm a baker, but that doesn't translate into.
But when you're, you know,
the flavor doesn't translate into a screen anyway. So,
I'm more at the interaction that you have with people than in the virtual world, at these virtual shows. Just trying to figure out if it's going to be more effective doing it on the computer screen, like Allison was talking about when she first started, or whether taking people around, showing them your work, even if it's two-dimensional work on panels in your booth.
If your work has impact, either one can work.
Either one, okay.
And I think it depends on your medium, too. Now, there was one Booth Central, or one person that they showed a video of who actually was sitting in her ceramic studio and had, you know, things laid out in front of her, and that I thought was very effective. That wasn't on Zoom, though. That was a video.
I would say that also it's partially a matter both of the personality of the artist and the personality of the buyer. Mm-hmm. If everything's pre-recorded, then you're making an assumption about the character and personality and interest of the person who's visiting. And so you reduce the opportunity a little bit for the personal spark and the connection that can make the difference between a sale or not. But it's not either or. You could have the video and then you could have the discussion. You could interrupt the video. You could do the video after the discussion, or the discussion after the video, depending on how long the video is. But certainly if you are talking to somebody else who has another Apple iOS device, doing something in FaceTime could work very well.
I've done that in my booth. I've had the wife come in and say, I really want my husband to see this. And I said, does he have FaceTime? And she actually FaceTimed him and then showed him each individual picture. It was great.
So
when art shows though are on these virtual art shows are asking, saying that we either want you to participate in the video thing, or they're saying, well, we start out with this video component, like you said, Allison, 4 hours at Crozet, was it? That are they looking for you to do a pre-recorded thing, or are they looking for you to do that interaction personally with the people?
Crozet wanted both.
Really?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, there was a spot on that little square that they gave each artist where you could play the video that the artist made.
But they could then buzz you, click you.
And then they could buzz me and talk to me in person.
Right.
Okay.
I would think also just a simple slideshow, which would be easier and less expensive to set up, could be effective.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sent one to Occasion, but that wasn't what they wanted. So.
I mean, so.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you have a website with a slideshow built into one of the pages, you could do a screen share, a Zoom screen share,
mm-hmm.
With that slideshow, and then interrupt it if anybody, you know, asked a question, and bring your face back up. So, and then that wouldn't work in a little tiny box because the screen share gets the whole screen in Zoom. Somebody could come up with an alternative tool that would allow multiple screen shares simultaneously. Zoom, if somebody pays Zoom enough, they'll do it, I'm sure. But that could be overwhelming also. You know, if there's too much going on the screen, your eyes go blank.
Yeah, you're.
I think we have to come, and I think it will happen if this goes on long enough, is that we'll get a standard. You know, I've seen that in computers like Beta versus VHS, that there will come out to be a standard. Like we've got Eventme, which I really didn't like the look and feel of. I did go into one of the event in the screens, or I'm not sure where I found it there. I guess there was a show going on with an event in the, and I didn't like the way, you know, I like the way my website works much better, but it's made to do in conjunction with a physical show or a virtual show.
Can I speak to the Eventney thing?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm late.
Yeah, hi, Ron.
I went out, Kentuck started their virtual show with Eventney this weekend. So I went out to shop it. And from a shopper's point of view, it worked so beautifully because it was easy to move around. I could get something from this person, something from that person.
That's a nice point.
And just had to check out once. So, of course, I had to buy something just to see what the back the back end was as far as how checkout went, how their emails to me went, and all of that. So far, I have been very impressed as a customer. Now, I've been impressed as an artist.
Did you do any artists that had variables? Like I sell in two different sizes and canvas gallery wraps and prints and frames. So I have several different ways somebody can buy a picture, and that seemed a little clunky to me.
You know, I can't remember.
They've actually been working with that. I was working with, before I talked to Greg Goldberdiel, who does the Historic Shaw Art Show, and some of the people were asking questions about that, and they've changed it. So from my understanding, variations is the concept I think we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't there 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's something new that's been added. And if you talk to their tech support people, one of the wonderful things I think about Eventney is they're willing to listen to what you're asking. And then if they think it's a good idea, they'll look in, they'll try to fix it for you and then come back. So it's under change. You might look at it now.
But okay.
When I talked to them about it, I was trying to get the same kind of thing is that say you do an image for me and Matt at work and I do it multiple sizes. Mm-hmm. And be able to connect it to the picture that they see when they say I do a collection of 15 matted images and they come in multiple sizes, that they can see the image, choose the correct image, go down and choose the correct size.
Yes.
They put it
yes.
in their shopping cart. Both those things will show up. So there'll be confirmation that, yes, that's what they're going to get, which didn't exist when this first started out with variations. There was no way to tell that the picture you were choosing what it was, or then when you went down to the text and dropped it in the shopping cart, that in any image went with it.
That's something I think it needs, definitely.
And you can talk to their tech support people. They'll listen to what you have to say, and their goal is to improve it. I think Bonnie's, that's good to hear her experience as a buyer. And as a buyer, it's a good thing.
Now, Ron, did you do the Shaw virtual show?
Yes, I did.
How did it go for you?
Well, it's still ongoing, but
okay.
Yeah, they're going to run it, I think, through the to the middle of December. Originally, they were just thinking maybe they'd do it for the duration of the show, but then Thanksgiving's coming up, Christmas is coming up. Now, if they don't promote it and they don't advertise it and it's just dead, then it's going to be interesting to see if anybody has any success with it.
Yeah, Crozet left our blocks up, apparently, our little artist squares, but...
Yeah.
But they can't do the Zoom thing with me.
Right. And so I think for me, I sold two boxes of note cards, and that was all so far. So it's not been overwhelming. But one of the things I like the most about Eventney is Eventney doesn't make any money, nor does the show make any money, unless they work well to bring in buyers that buy art.
Yes.
That's how they make their money. So
that's the way it should be.
Yes, I agree, because if they do their job right, everybody will be happy. Most importantly, buyers of art will find what they want. And that's what we need, because the rest of this goes away if we don't find buyers for our art. So if we do find them and they bring them in, that's their responsibility, then it's a win-win for everybody, I think. Glad to hear you say that too.
I have a question about Shaw. Were all of the people there normal exhibitors?
Yeah, they were juried in, and the way you can't get into, you couldn't get into the show. I actually know an artist that has done it in the past, but did not apply this year. And they were politely refused to be able to participate.
Well, I was curious because I did Shaw for years. Love that little show.
Yeah, it is.
And the quality, I'm a jeweler, and the quality was just horrendous. Ah. It used to be so hard to get into.
Yeah. And it was, and there was a time period for 4 years there where they brought in somebody to do the juring and run the show besides the Goberdeal folks.
Right.
Who was a rock and roll promoter. And yeah, it was different then. It's really, you could have gotten into it well before and after, but during those 4 years they ran it, it changed big time.
I like dealing with Greg personally.
So. Yeah, he's a nice guy. So I hope for the artists there, and maybe this year, because their show wasn't until October, maybe a lot of artists, you know, it's like you had to apply while it was a real show and get accepted or rejected. Mm. And maybe a lot of artists at that point just weren't willing to travel to St. Louis. So they had maybe a lot less options in terms of who to choose for jewelry.
Okay. One thing that, I don't know, was good about Occasion, I got waitlisted for Occasion this year. And I also got waitlisted for Artisphere, but Occasion took me as a waitlist artist, which I think was cool because, I mean, if you're online, you've got space, but Artisphere did not.
Well, are you saying that they didn't have space when you asked them if you could be in it?
Well, I didn't ask. I was waitlisted.
Oh, you're waitlisted, and they didn't let you in?
No.
Wow, that's interesting.
Maybe I should have asked.
Maybe they were limiting the amount of people in the virtual show from who had applied.
Yes, they were limiting to who had been accepted because right. They did a real jury. You know, I remember back in March being really excited when they moved it to August and I was on the wait list and surely somebody won't be able to make it in August. And well, nobody was
looks
able
like
to make
nobody
it in
has.
August.
Any other thoughts? Because this is a rich, I mean, our fates are being determined by virtual right now. And it's just amazing how many different strategies people are developing and to try to do this and how many of them are just not working well. And what are the components that seem to work well? Like, for example, one of the things that we've discussed, the length, the duration that the virtual show should run relative to the actual event dates that would have happened. Should it go longer? Is there an advantage to going longer? Does it have to be restricted in terms of the advertising done by the show to the normal physical distance they would have traveled from the show? Because this is virtual now. So if you're in St. Louis, can you not reach out to Des Moines and Kansas City and Chicago and all these other places?
Because we travel all over the country anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Go ahead.
Well, Crozet, I had a lot of people hit my website on Crozet. In fact, I sat and watched it on Google Analytics. And everybody was from Richmond, Charlottesville, Stanton, Waynesboro, which would be the normal pull for the show. But, you know, they didn't, I guess they were the most expensive. They charged $73 to do the show. But I don't want to see you dilute your audience, you know, because you've only got so much advertising money to spend.
But how would you be diluting it?
Well, you've only got so much advertising money to spend. So if you're advertising in, you know, if they had advertised in Washington, D.C., that would have been a great market for me. But then they can't advertise as much somewhere else. I mean, yes, they did Facebook and things like that, but they also did email and ads on TV.
And Crozet was Booth Central, right?
Yes.
So is this kind of a strength for something like Eventme to say, because you're limited on a budget by what you charge? Just for the record, I saw one show in Fort Collins, Colorado that was charging $175 for a virtual booth. That's the record I've seen.
I've heard of 500.
Yes, really? I have.
Damn.
Oh my God, who's doing that?
Was that Philadelphia? Who was that?
I don't know. It came up at the meeting on Thursday night. Allison Antelman said something about it.
I think I saw that. And immediately popped it out of my brain because I didn't need to know that.
But if they could, if they had the money.
Oh, it's the Smithsonian show.
Okay.
Smithsonian.
I was thinking either Philadelphia or Smithsonian. I don't care.
I don't understand is between Zap and Juried Art Services, why haven't they come up with a virtual show?
Well, Greg, good question.
It's not there. Well, I don't know about Juried Art Services, but
Zap's you just hire
thing.
A programmer.
But then you are competing with your customers, and that's a dangerous.
And as a programmer,
well, no, actually, you're providing it as a service to your customers.
Okay, so you build the platform, and you let your customers use your platform. That
right.
makes
who
sense.
Who are already under contract with you for their shows?
That makes
as
great sense.
As a programmer, Zap does not have very good programmers.
No, I know, and they don't take advice well.
And that, yeah. They
in the same way that all the rest of us have to adapt to what's going on, it seems like from what you're saying, Larry and Frank, that maybe this is something that Zap and Juried Art Services need to have somebody really make the point with them, is that we have to all adapt. That would be a great adaptation if they built the platform that people, they're...
Well, if Zap doesn't have good programmers, it'd be better off not telling them that.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, Juried Art Services look so much nicer. I have a lot of opinions
There's
on
one
that.
Thing you haven't thought about, Ron, which is in the long run, if all the art shows extend their reach, it's probably not good for artists, because what will happen is the best shows will become the only shows. Mm-hmm. If anybody can go to the Smithsonian virtual show and they're only going to go to two or three shows a year, they'll go to Smithsonian, they'll go to Philadelphia, they'll go to one other, and all the less prestigious shows just won't get an audience.
Well, now, are you talking about virtual or actual shows?
Virtual. You know, I mean, an actual show, you have to go somewhere. So you
right,
have
but actually, if you're going looking to buy something, you're going to start closer to home.
Yeah.
Yes. But if I can shop from home.
But it still has to be shipped or delivered or picked up.
But I'm used to having things shipped to me now, you know, I mean.
Yeah, but not big artwork.
Yeah, my shipping.
You bet.
Shipping one of my large panos is $150.
So?
One per box.
I would pay it if I could get what I'm looking for. I don't have any issue with the shipping charge. And I look at it as, think of the money I'm saving by not going to, you know, I shopped in Kentuck. I've gotten into the show, but I've never actually done it. But I really wanted to see it. Now I've seen it. Didn't cost me a dime. Well, yeah, I guess it did cost me something, but it didn't cost me a dime to get there and shop the show. So I spent money at the show.
And I think going to your point, Frank, which is a good one, but I think that one, no show is going to be able to reach everywhere. They're not going to have that much money. And two, it's one of my concerns is that if they don't continue to advertise it after they advertise the start of the event, then nobody else is going to know about it except those initial people that found out about it. And then for a lot of other people, I think there's still a lot of turf out there to be explored. And how far out would the Smithsonian ever reach? like it, to me, it makes sense if you're in the Midwest that you'd reach out further in the Midwest. And if you're in Florida, you'd reach out further in Florida than you normally would, even somewhat up farther north. But I don't think any show is going to have the capability of reaching everyone. And again, even if they did, it would only be for a small window of time that they could do it. The rest of that year is open to other shows to say.
And don't forget our mailing lists. You know, I sent out mail lists for Crozet to everybody because, hey, it's virtual. Join in.
And that's what the shows really need, is they need all of our help to publicize the virtual shows. And I know Summer's opinion is that, you know, it's up to the show to do the advertising, get the people in. I tend to take a slightly different view of it because I can track, you know, 25 to 30% of my sales directly from my mailing list.
Right.
Yeah, I did a lot of advertisement. I did it on my Facebook page. I did it through the email list.
Remember, there was a time when Long's Park wanted to mail out postcards for all the artists.
Yes.
They provided the postcards. The artist filled them out, sent them back, and Long's Park was going to pay the postage. And they sent them out late.
Oh.
And it screwed everybody.
Well, I liked when they gave us a list, a sheet of paper, and they wanted everyone's name and address.
Yeah.
So that they could mail to them. And I said, you know, I'm not going to do that. They did not give me, they gave me permission for me to send them something,
right.
Not you.
I did a show, a physical show, an exhibit in February at the McGuffey Art Center. And they gave me they actually printed out the labels for me. And I sent out 600 postcards. If anybody needs any postcard stamps, I've got them. but
yeah,
I did.
You probably need to add a few cents to it.
Yeah, probably by now. But back a couple years ago, you know, every year our dump has a bring your hazardous waste. And a couple years ago, you know, they put it in the property tax bill. This is the date. Well, of course, we missed it. The next year, they sent a little card out just before. They sent a postcard, which I sat on the counter, and we took our hazardous waste, and it took us all day. The line for the dump reached out to the main road. So it was, I thought, you know, that was my decision to send out the postcards for my exhibit. It's like, if somebody has something in their hands, it really does make a difference. But I don't have addresses for people. I have mailing.
But how many people, artists, fellow artists, you know, don't have either, and especially email addresses, because they haven't been collecting them?
Oh, I
better late than never. Better late than never.
Yeah.
Well, you can always start, but in terms of using, having the artist, going to what Bonnie was saying about having the artist help do the promotion, I think if it's the first time in an area, you don't have a list for that area. And then if you've never been collecting email addresses or physical addresses, you have nothing to contribute.
You can actually buy lists and they're not very expensive.
Yeah. Philosophically, no. That's a problem for me because that's like somebody that comes to the show and picks up your business card and has no interest in you or your art because they want your active email address to sell to somebody else. And it may not be a nice,
Well, I know I back when I did shows in Florida, I used to, and I did a postcard of all my shows, you know, or three or four shows in a row, and I would send out postcards with a special, you know, $10 off. And I got a few of them back, but I would buy a list for that area. And you could say homeowners from age what to age what.
Oh, interesting.
And it
worked?
It worked pretty well. And it cost like $25, $30 to buy the list. And then, of course, they have special. You don't it's a one-time only list, because they actually have bogus addresses in there that if they get them back, they'll know you used it a second time.
See, now,
I did something like that with my color x-ray pictures, you know, photographs of x-rays with color filters. I bought a list of orthopedic surgeon addresses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I paid somebody to sit here and fill out, you know, the name and address on the front of the postcard. And I actually made about $700 or $800 in sales, which kind of paid for the whole thing. So I didn't lose any money.
So how would
my orthopod still has your picture of the x-ray of my knee hanging in his radiology room.
That's what I should do with my, yeah. Although the doctor who did Cliff's hips is down in Florida.
Yeah,
they're really cool.
Yeah, they are cool.
So for those artists that have collected, say, for example, email addresses, how do artists feel about if the show said, we'd like to reach out to art buyers? And if you have a list of buyers, would you give us your email list?
No way in hell.
No.
Okay.
I have told each one of those people that I will keep their email address safe, and I'm not going to let somebody else use it. These are my customers. These aren't people that just signed up for a list.
What about zip codes? Because I know that's something one of the promoters is talking about using, asking for just for the zip codes.
That's a pretty darn good idea.
Well,
I have zip codes.
I have that email collection form. It's available on the website where you can download the audio from these meetings. There's a link to the form you hang in your booth, and it has email address and zip code. So you could target.
I collect the zip code as well. From my email list.
It doesn't matter. You could, you know, basically you want something like 150 miles from wherever the next show is.
Unless it's a virtual show.
Right. And that, in which case you want everybody.
Right.
Yeah. I've sent to everybody.
That's the nice thing about the virtual shows. I don't have to worry about which zip code they're in or anything like that, because I can send it to everyone. You know, I've got a really good snail mail email list and because I've been in this for close to forever, and I've been collecting snail mail addresses since day one, I think.
So you gotta,
I'm shocked at how many people.
Convert those snail mail addresses to email addresses.
No. So I have an extremely good email open rate, but nothing has worked as well as those blasted Pretty Little postcards. So I'll spend the money. I'll hopefully find somebody to put the labels on. I can send them multiple emails, which I do, but it's the postcards that really get me the dollar return. What are you doing, Larry?
I don't know. I don't want to see my neck here. Oh. And I don't know which side it is.
All right. So Larry, you need a button down shirt.
Yeah, I know. I have them in the closet.
Yeah. I'm not.
But this is the advantage. I'm not wearing pants today.
Post office has decided that my husband is handicapped and we live on a very fast and curvy road, and we had a handicapped mailbox, and they have decided we can't have it anymore because he lives with somebody able-bodied, even though, and I tried, you know, I travel enough, and it's just like, so we put up a cheap mailbox. And
are there any mailboxes on your side of the road?
No.
Because I had my choice here. We didn't have a mailbox when we moved in. It was across the street, but it was a rural route. And when I went to put in a new mailbox, I put it in front of my house. The guy that delivered the mail says, it doesn't matter which side of the street you're on. I hit you going one way or hit you coming back.
I think we offered that though.
Find out who delivers your mail and see if they'll deliver it if they come back on the other side of the road.
Oh, they're being pissy. So, well, we used to have a giant box so that almost all packages could go in the box. We've now got a tiny little mailbox. And after election season, I'm going to go down there like, you know, every morning when I'm here. And if there's nothing in there I want, I'm just going to leave it in there until they complain to say, well, I wasn't here to pick it up. And they still have to deliver any packages to the house, to the porch. And now they no longer can drive through. They have to get out of the truck and put it on the porch.
All right. Listen, I have to go feed the dogs. And the conversation has gone away from art shows.
Yes.
So till next week.
Thank you. Appreciate you holding it.
All right.
Yes. Yes. I enjoy these. Sorry to get off topic.
No, that's all right. We'll see you all next week, and I'll have everything up if you're interested in the audio. I put up the video because Allison did a great job in Photoshop, but limiting it to audio, so there's much less of a file size there. And Allison,
thank you all.
Allison, Photoshop is easier to use if you change your background to a dark gray.
I like it light gray.
Right, just right click on the page when there's an image open, and you can change the background to any color you want.
Okay. Then I can just put them up and, well, I don't know. We'll figure that out.
Well, you don't want to do black because then you don't see where your image is with black in.
Yeah.
But dark gray is easier on your eyes.
Okay.
There's less contrast. All right, everybody.
All righty. See you next week.
All right. See you next week.